Ivor, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks,
very
Sean.
Glad to be with you.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the program. How is the feeling in the lead up to the launch itself? I imagine getting a little bit exciting.
Oh, very exciting indeed. To be my second satellite, which I've held in my hands and which is going to be going up to the International Space Station and going into space. So it's, yeah, very exciting. Bit of trepidation too, because, you know, things can go wrong.
Well, what will yourself and your scientists what will scientists be watching when Kuava 1 actually makes it to the International Space Station? What's actually going to be observed?
Well, I mean, as you know, it'll take about a day or so for us to get to the International Space Station. And then we'll wait, unfortunately, for about a month until we're deployed into space. And then it takes our spacecraft, once it's deployed into space, basically being shot out from a tube with a spring that goes ping, a bit like Monty Python. it will come alive about 30 minutes later, and it should start sending beacon signals back. And we've got four payloads on board, all built here in Australia, and two technology demonstrators. And we'll be doing a lot of things with the payloads. We've got one really good imaging assembly. So it's got a very good red, green, blue camera, which will take pictures of the Earth, a spectrograph that will be able to look at the light coming back from the Earth with very good resolution, about one nanometer, so 10 to the minus 9 of a meter in wavelengths. And then we've got this really small instrument called TinyTOL, which is part of the Breakthrough Foundation, which will try to take images of Alpha Centauri, as you mentioned, which is a binary star. It uses the fact that it's a binary star to be able to beat down the noise and be able to get down to the diffraction limit. And hopefully future ones will be able to actually see exoplanets in orbit around Alpha Centauri. So that's one of the instruments, but I'll stop for a moment and let you ask me something else.
Well, one of the things, I guess, that intrigues about this, as I mentioned there, it is being launched on one of the SpaceX rockets, and this is sort of more of a foray. We're seeing more and more forays into private space exploration. How do we see that kind of industry growing at the moment?
Well, space is increasingly important in our day-to-day lives, whether it's images of the Earth that, you know, show disasters or the weather or, you know, how well crops are growing or used for mineral exploration, or it's something like GPS, you know, yes, positions, navigation, timing. And you say, well, who cares about timing? Well, all of the stock market transactions and most of our financial transactions are timed using GPS signals. So if you don't have them, it's a real problem. And you know, those are now increasingly areas for private or commercial groups to go in, because we use it in everyday life. And so there's money to be made on it. And so it makes a lot of sense that space becomes increasingly a commercial area of endeavor rather than just governmental, and indeed even just purer science goals. So that's only going to increase, and I think it's in general a good thing, it's, you know, because it involves trying to make everyday life on Earth better, and other things like trying to make us live on our planet in a sustainable way. So I think it's increasingly important that we go commercial, but you can't let commercial groups, so to speak, run riot without any regulation, in my opinion. And that, I think, is going to be an increasing area of concern. Having said that, the major space groups like, you know, Elon Musk's SpaceX and others, you know, they talk to NASA, they talk to ESA, they talk to groups like the International Committee on Space Research, which has expert advisory panels on planetary protection, you know, trying to avoid, for instance, human microbes going to Mars or the moon and colonizing there and then confusing us when we're trying to work out whether life has ever existed on Mars. Mm. Have regulation, but allowing commercial groups and private groups to go off into space is important.
And what about the role of Australia in this one? I mean, obviously, is this in this particular mission that we are talking about here a fairly significant step for Australia's role in the I don't know if it's a race anymore, the space race, the space kind of industry at the moment?
Well, it's certainly an important step for us in developing our own space sector. And yeah, how would I put this? You know, Australia has had experts in space science for, you know, 60 years and beyond. You know, Brian O'Brien, for instance, had some of the early Apollo instruments on the Apollo spacecraft and landed on the moon and were there for 60 years gaining data. And he's, you know, an original Australian, but lived, worked in the States for a while and then came back. And that's one instance of us getting out into space early as individuals. But our government has been very slow until, you know, 3 years ago when it formed the Australian Space Agency. And so these, you know, we are starting to come into our own and have a space sector that, you know, befits a country that has United Nations responsibility for about 1/8 of the globe. Mm. You might mischievously say we ought to have 1/8 of the space exploration budget globally, which we certainly don't have. So I think this is a significant step. It's going to be Quava 1 and its stable mate, Binar 1 from Western Australia, Phil Bland and others. Those will be the two CubeSats being deployed from this mission. And they should be only ever the 9th or 10th Australian built satellites of any sort to work in space. So only 10. So we're really in our infancy here. Mm. But both of them carry, you know, significant new technology demonstrators and payloads. And so this is the step of or part of the Australian space sector really starting to come into its own and do good things that will be, you know, internationally prominent and hopefully build our space industry and our space sector for the good of all.
And Ivor, just before I let you go, as you mentioned there, this one will be turning its eyes towards Alpha Centauri, possibly in the search for life. What do you reckon is the truth out there, and are we ready for it?
Whether we're ready for it, I think that depends what form the life is. We all enjoy science fiction, of course, and the possibilities range from absolutely wonderful to catastrophic. I suspect the truth is somewhere well in between there. I think we'll be ready for certainly benign discoveries of life. And really, that's what we're expecting. We're expecting something more like microbial life or, you know, early plant life, that sort of thing. And I think that's going to have to be widely available throughout our galaxy and the universe. Whether there's intelligent life out there, well, I guess, you know, look at it this way. We've evolved and we are somewhat intelligent. Maybe not sustainably intelligent, but somewhat intelligent. And, you know, the probabilities are that there's got to be other civilizations out there. We will not discover it with our Kuawa 1 mission. but, you know, that's we're on a path in Kuawa and in Australia generally. We're on path to, you know, discovering what space is about and being able to use it effectively for our benefit and sustainably. And it's going to be exciting and it's a necessary thing for us to do.
Well, Ivor, I do love this sort of talk. Thank you very much. Really do appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks very much, Sean. Look forward to talking again.